Good morning. I'd like to thank the CDC, the organizers of this meeting, for inviting me to talk about some of our research that has been done over the last several years at the University of Pittsburgh. I'm honored to be part of this panel with distinguished colleagues who have made really important contributions to the field of PID, and kudos to the CDC for recognizing the importance of PID and making this symposium, because often it gets left off because it is not as common as chlamydia and gonorrhea in terms of numbers. I'll try to summarize all of our research and this theory behind subclinical PID in 9 minutes or so. My job is to convince you that subclinical pelvic inflammatory disease is truly an important cause of reproductive morbidity in women. In 1997, the Institute of Medicine put out this statement that I think is all of us are familiar with and comfortable with, but I think is worth reiterating, that a variety of women's health problems, including infertility, chronic pelvic pain, and ectopic pregnancy, result from unrecognized or untreated sexually transmitted diseases. So to start the story, we have to actually do what we often do as we're defining diseases, is look retrospectively. So we know that infertility remains a very common problem to American women and to women across the world. Over 7 million women have sought some type of service, medical service, for the treatment or evaluation of infertility. That's over 12% of women. And of those women who have infertility, tubal factor infertility remains one of the most common single etiologies of infertility. As a matter of fact, the Institute of Medicine also estimates that that PID is the etiology of infertility in approximately 15% of infertile American women. When you go to developing countries, the rate of tubal damage causing infertility is significantly higher than we're seeing in the United States. So both in the U.S. and worldwide, the problem caused by pelvic inflammatory disease is quite substantial. Now, the CDC has been tracking in vitro fertilization rates and ART, or assisted reproductive technology rates, and they continue to climb. And that may be reflecting the fact that insurance has become more of an elected to pay for some of these procedures, and certainly increasing number of clinics and access to clinics. But still, nonetheless, the problem of infertility is still highly prevalent in the United States. So we know that over the last 20 years, we've seen rising rates of chlamydia screening in the United States with an intent to reduce pelvic inflammatory disease and the reproductive outcomes of PID, namely infertility and ectopic pregnancy. Certainly, we're not at rates of chlamydia screening that we should be proud of yet, but we know slowly there's been a slight increase in the eligible women who are screened for chlamydia. And we have seen, at least in the first part of the 21st century, a reduction in PID rates, at least as far as we can measure by national databases. That appears to have tapered off recently. But nonetheless, we were thinking that all this chlamydia screening is really making an important impact on pelvic inflammatory disease. However, we're not seeing the same impact on the outcomes of PID. This is a paper recently published by Delia Scholes out of the Group Health Cooperative in the state of Washington, where she demonstrated that there was a 79% increase in chlamydia cases detected between 1997 and 2007, a concomitant decrease in PID rates, as you can see here, but no change in the ectopic pregnancy rates over time. Same thing has been shown by Karen Hoover in a poster presentation at ACOG a few years ago, where the time trends for ectopic pregnancy were either stable or slightly higher. And similarly with tubal factor infertility, no real decline in the years 2002 to 2007 in tubal factor infertility. All of this suggesting that while we may see less of the fewer cases of acute pelvic inflammatory disease, post-infectious tubal damage, probably as a result of subclinical, silent, or atypical presentations of pelvic inflammatory disease, continue to plague American women. And this is a classic case. This is one of my patients who was 29 who came in for multiple complaints, primarily chronic pelvic pain, dysmenorrhea, and primary infertility. She had no history of sexually transmitted diseases. And when we did the laparoscopy to determine why she was having pelvic pain, we saw these adhesions, kinked and blocked fallopian tubes, all consistent with prior pelvic inflammatory disease that was unrecognized. So what is the evidence behind subclinical PID as an important cause of fallopian tube damage in women? Again, looking retrospectively, we know that among women who present to infertility clinics with a complaint of infertility, those who have tubal factor infertility are far more likely to be seropositive for chlamydial trachomatis, indicative of prior chlamydial infection, than those women who have infertility as a result of another etiology other than blocked tubes or due to healthy controls. The same thing is true for gonorrhea. There's less robust studies, but nonetheless, gonococcal antibodies are more common in women who present with tubal factor infertility. Importantly, the WHO outlined that 93% of infertile women who had bilateral tubal occlusion had antibodies to chlamydia or gonorrhea, compared to only 40% of fertile women, and the majority of those women did not report any prior symptoms of PID indicative of subclinical infection that was going on unrecognized and untreated. And this is the same kind of picture of a woman with an ectopic pregnancy. So the same thing with tubal factor infertility is what we see with ectopic pregnancy. This is a woman who did not have a history of PID, but yet still had an ectopic pregnancy and evidence of adhesions around the liver indicative of old pelvic inflammatory disease. And again, that retrospective analysis does indicate that women with ectopic pregnancies are far more likely to have antibodies to chlamydia than healthy controls. What other evidence is there about subclinical pelvic inflammatory disease? Well, one piece of evidence that's important is that we know that sexually transmitted organisms, and particularly chlamydia, can be found in the fallopian tubes in women without acute pelvic inflammatory disease in a couple of cohorts, and due to the sake of time, I won't describe that too much. We also know that women who have post-infectious tubal factor infertility due to without a history of PID, that is subclinical infection, have the same electron microscopy histopathologic findings on the tubal mucosa as women with acute pelvic inflammatory disease, as outlined by Dorothy Patton in some very nice work. So to summarize, what we knew prior is that many women with tubal factor infertility and ectopic pregnancy have serologic evidence of past chlamydia or gonorrhea without a history of acute PID, that we can find chlamydia in the fallopian tubes of women who don't have PID symptoms, and chlamydia can cause similar tubal damage in both acute and subclinical PID. So this is the new paradigm that we think of when we look at PID in the United States, that only a small minority have severe symptoms, about a third have mild to moderate symptoms, but the majority of women who we believe have PID actually have subclinical or silent PID. So this is a summary of 10 years of research in one slide. This is what we do in Pittsburgh. If you're a woman who has chlamydia, gonorrhea, or bacterial vaginosis, or at risk for pelvic inflammatory disease, you will have the opportunity to participate in a study where we sample your endometrium and look for endometrial inflammation. These are plasma cells in the stroma. These are neutrophils in the subepithelial layer, all indicative of endometritis. And in women without PID symptoms, if we find endometritis, we consider that indicative of subclinical pelvic inflammatory disease. We enrolled over 500 women in our first study, in a cross-sectional study, looking at what is the rate of subclinical PID or endometritis in women who present to the Allegheny County Health Department's STD clinic without signs or symptoms of PID, but who have BV, gonorrhea, or chlamydia. And what we found was that 1 in 4 women with chlamydia or gonorrhea and 1 in 7 women with bacterial vaginosis already have endometrial inflammation consistent with pelvic inflammatory disease in the absence of signs or symptoms of that disorder. And again, these are women who are asymptomatic, who are coming in with seemingly uncomplicated lower genital tract syndromes or infections. This is unpublished data, but data we presented at ISSTDR that showed that same relationship with Mycoplasma genitalia. This is another way to look at it, looking at different types of inflammatory cells in the endometrium. And the bottom line with this slide is that if a woman is infected with chlamydia and gonorrhea, she has between a 40 and 60% chance of having endometrial inflammation in the endometrium. That's chlamydia and gonorrhea in the cervix. If we find it in the endometrium, almost all women have endometrial inflammation. But importantly, what are the long-term sequelae of subclinical PID? This is, for those who aren't radiologists, this is an HSG that shows blocked fallopian tubes in a woman participating in one of our studies. And importantly, we followed these women over time, these women who had subclinical PID and these women who did not have subclinical PID, and we followed them over time for fertility. And this is my last slide that shows that over time, women who were identified as having subclinical PID in our studies were about 40 to 50% less likely to become pregnant over time. You can see this in this Kaplan-Meier plot, that the women who had subclinical PID were less likely to become pregnant over time after controlling for prior pregnancies, contraception, smoking, sex partners, etc. So it was an independent association with subsequent infertility, the first time that in a prospective manner the relationship between subclinical PID and infertility was demonstrated. So in summary, there's ample retrospective data linking tubal factor infertility ectopic with prior episodes of gonorrhea and chlamydia. Most of these upper tract infections are unrecognized. We believe that subclinical PID is present in at least 1 in 4 women with chlamydia or gonococcal cervicitis and about 1 in 7 women with BV. I didn't show this data, but we have demonstrated that women with subclinical PID have similar demographic and microbiologic features as women with acute PID. But importantly, women with subclinical PID had a doubling of infertility compared to women without subclinical pelvic inflammatory disease. So hopefully I've convinced you this morning that subclinical pelvic inflammatory disease is an important cause of infertility in women. Thank you.